It's time to get away. And to help get you there, it's Travel Bags with Anita and Friends. From around the world to across Georgia, she covers it all. Here's the host of Travel Bags, Anita Thomas.
Hello, 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 and welcome aboard Travel Bags with Anita and Friends. Now, today I have a story for you, a story of the ages, one that is filled with compassion, kindness, and perseverance. It's a story about an American lieutenant, Donald K. Johnson, who arrived on Omaha Beach on the infamous D-Day. Now, his story, you would think, would be filled with, of course, bravery, but also loss. But however, in the midst of World War II, this young lieutenant met and befriended a young orphan boy named Gilbert. It changed their lives in ways that were filled with compassion and kindness, stretching across not only the miles, but also the years, never to be broken. She brings the two families together after 50 years of being apart. But as you will hear in Diane's story, the love, the kindness, the compassion, all of those things have not died. They have not gone away. They're still there, waiting to be reunited again. So here's my conversation with Diane as she tells her story. Welcome to the show, Diane. It's so great to have you on. I know we've talked about having you on, and we are here. So let's jump right in, because I am so fascinated by your story, which is also really your father's story. And it's filled with so much love, compassion, kindness, and really that perseverance to never give up, to always believe. And with the backdrop of so much of the story being based during World War II, there's also the courage and the leadership of your father that's so much a part of the book, who was a lieutenant junior in the 111th Battalion of the Seabees in the U.S. Naval Reserves. So why don't we start there by really kind of letting everyone know who your father was, and also his part in the D-Day invasion in June of 1944, and those experiences that really changed his life and certainly guided yours. So tell us about his part in the infamous invasion.
Yeah, so my father grew up on a farm in South Dakota and put himself through the South Dakota School of Mines in Rapid City, which is quite a long way. He rode a motorcycle there and back. During vacations, he had to work all night in a printing press to pay for his fees, but he really loved engineering, and he graduated. And when he went into the Navy for World War II, he joined the Seabees, which are the Civil Engineer Corps for the Navy. And because he was already a college graduate and engineer, he was considered old. You know, he was 29, and he had all these 18-year-old sailors under him. And what they did was, in England, they built the Rhino ferries. And anybody who knows about World War II, they were considered the secret weapons of D-Day, because they built these huge ferries that were like, I put it in my book about how many pounds they could hold and all that. And the Rhino ferries, powered by two 143 horsepower Chrysler outboard marine motors, measured 175 feet long and could hold 40 vehicles and up to 600 tons. Their strength equal to a civilian highway bridge. So that was on D-Day. They could just unload these huge amounts of troops and supplies and land on the beach. And of course, my father was supposed to land on Omaha Beach, which was considered Bloody Omaha. It was so terrible. About 2,000 soldiers died that morning trying to land because they hadn't been able to take out the Germans on the hill. There was too much fog that morning, and the airplanes missed their targets. And so until that was secured by about midday, then they started landing all these troops and trucks and tanks and everything. And so they were very quickly able to take on the beach after, you know, by the late day, and go up the hill, and they started building the camp. My father was one of the engineers in charge of building the camp there up on the cliff where all the soldiers in the Seabees lived, but also all the soldiers who came through on their way to the front had a nice place, you know, to sleep and warm showers. You know, they're engineers. They had the best showers. They figured out the showers. And they also supposedly had the best food. I'm not sure, but they would unload the ships every day from England also for all the supplies. So his group and my father played a huge part in the D-Day invasion from their engineering skills.
Well, yes, I read in your book, you know, he talks about, you know, building, you know, the campsite there and about the food. So it does sound like the food was pretty good.
Yeah, no, I guess they ate quite well.
It sounds like it. Because I really loved reading your book about your father and how he would just load up the food from the mess hall and load it into his Jeep and take it to share with the local farmhouses. Because really their fields had been destroyed with all of the trampling and all the action that was taking place there. So that good food didn't go to waste.
Absolutely. Like all the good food went to the Germans. And then, like you said, there was so much devastation in the fields. And because my father grew up on a farm, he had a tremendous relationship with food, and hated to see it wasted because he knew how hard it is to grow it. And so, yeah, he would load up the Jeep every night with the leftover food and take it down the road. And when I was little, you know, sitting around all my childhood, sitting around our little yellow Formica table, he would tell these stories about his time in France. And that was one of his favorite stories, is how excited the French people would be when he showed up at their door and said he had very limited French from his high school in South Dakota, where the teacher had never heard French and she just kind of made up what it would sound like. And so he had a terrible accent, but he knew how to say pour vous, you know, for you. Uh-huh. And of course the French would be so excited. They would launch into this giant, you know, this torrent of French, which he couldn't understand, but they, you know, use sign language. And then, of course, that's how he met Gilbert, was through food, you know, his relationship with food, because Gilbert looked so skinny and scrawny, and they had all this food, and Dad's like, you know, using his high school French, you know, tu veux manger avec moi? You know, he knew how to say, would you like to eat with me, you know, and so that's how their relationship started.
Well, yeah, well, let's jump in and talk about that, because shortly after your father arrived in Normandy, you write about him seeing this little small little boy, Gilbert, standing out in the high grass. And you can just picture that, this small little lad, and you can just, you know, barely see him there. And he seems shy, but he also seems quite curious. And this is really the start of the whole endearing story. So tell us a little bit about the boy that he finds near his tent.
Yeah, so what happened was, Gilbert, it's Gilbert, but the French pronunciation is Gilbert, and my father always called him Gilbert.
I love that.
Yeah, so he lived with a caretaker, and this woman had a little granddaughter, so they were playmates, and they lived right above what had been a field, and then overnight became the Navy camp, you know, huge camp with all these soldiers and jeeps, and of course he was an orphan, he didn't have a father. And so all these men, he was completely, you know, riveted on what was happening. And he would hide in the little grass on the hill, which is quite tall. And you could kind of just barely see his little head. And he would look down and watch, you know, from morning till night. And that's where my dad spotted him, was that he saw something moving in the grass. And it's like, oh, what could that be? And then, you know, this little head. So that's when he motioned for Gilbert to come down and started talking to him. And it was noon. And it's like, come on, eat with me, you know. And so that's how their relationship started.
Yeah, I mean, the kindness your father extended to Gilbert for lunch and for dinner, I mean, he really did take him under his wing. And we need to stop and take a little break here, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about that, because his relationship with Gilbert really does extend past just only the lunchtime or the dinner time. They really develop a very strong, strong connection there. So let's take a break, and if you'll sit tight and hold out for me, we'll be right back. Diane really brings her father's story to life, so much so that you can actually visualize everything that was happening as she describes it. We have to stop here and take a break, but when we come back, I will continue with Diane's story, where we hear more about how her father and Gilbert actually met. Now, as we go in and out of the segments, I am playing music that really highlights and brings to mind those brave men and women who served our country. So take a listen as we go out here on Travel Bags with Anita and Friends. Back in a moment.
boom, boom, boom.